Totally Football Show. Today, Liverpool come from behind to win on penalties in Istanbul again as Chelsea suffer Super Cup reversal. We ask, is Super Cup reversal cup of soup? And in other Turkey news, what of Celtic, who crashed out of their Euro preliminary? We ruminate on all of that and then look forward to the weekend. A massive round for the big sides and the ones lining up to knock them out of the top spots. And Man City taking on Spurs. We'll have that, your questions, Jonathan Pearce's pre-game notes and more in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Hello, listener. In the pod for you today, we have Michael Cox, author of The Mixer and AKA Zonal Marking, and now, of course, writing tactics for quite understated website, The Athletic.
Spot on.
Also in from the shy, almost invisible Athletic football journalism source, it's Jack Lang.
Hi, James.
Hi, Jack. You got a piece on there about Lucas Moura.
I have today, yeah.
All right, how timely. Perhaps we'll have a little word about that later on. And not from The Athletic, but very athletic. It's Duncan Alexander.
Hi, James. Quite athletic.
Right. I'm comfortable with your digits. Good. Well, some stat action to come from you, Duncan. No doubt. We've got a lot to discuss today. Of course, Premier League hoving back interview. But there's been big football midweek as well with the European Super Cup. And another trophy for Liverpool. Klopp can't stop winning silverware now. As mentioned, on penalties in Istanbul after trailing at half-time. Giroud giving Chelsea the lead, and then Manny with a brace, and then the Jorginho penalty, and then it all went to penalties. And what do we make of it all, Michael Cox?
Game of two halves, really. Chelsea started excellently.
Four halves, actually, technically.
Well, that is true. It's only two halves of the initial three quarters.
Yep.
It really all changed when Firmino came on. And I thought Liverpool were exceptional for 20, 25 minutes. Probably should have won the game, I think, by the end of the 90 or by the end of the 120.
So the second half of the original 90 started with Chelsea one goal up and looking the better side. And within 3 minutes, with Firmino having come on at half-time, Liverpool were ahead and suddenly all over the Blues. Why did he make such a difference?
Within 5 minutes, he dropped deep and got the ball between the lines, and Chelsea's centre-backs didn't know whether to follow or not. And that's not something they had in the first half. And he's just very good at playing those little balls for the wide players coming inside. He did that against Norwich for Salah's goal. And like I say, I just don't think Liverpool have a replacement in that mould.
You saw that in the Champions League final when Firmino wasn't fit and Liverpool struggled. I mean, obviously they did score early and sort of sat back deliberately, I think. But yeah, I mean, they've kind of got a heritage of that sort of player. You know, you think back to Kenny Dalglish, Peter Beardsley, that kind of striker that drops deep and kind of creates spaces. It's quite a Liverpool thing when they're successful.
You see other strikers dropping deep. Harry Kane is a good example. When he drops off, he'll turn and he'll spray a nice pass out. He's got that part to his game, but rarely will he kind of pin his ears back and run at people. Firmino can do that as well. We saw in the lead-up to what almost became a chance for him, he did a little attempted 1-2 with Salah, and that was him picking up near the centre circle and just going, really, driving at the centre-back. Centre-backs, I think, hate that. Someone driving at them from central positions, pulled defenders out of their usual position, slipped it to Salah. Salah's return ball was very close to freeing him up. I think he's just got multiple ways of hurting you, and combined with his spatial intelligence, which I think everybody is well aware of by now, I think he's just such a complete package.
Hats off to the transfer committee who chose to buy him from Hoffenheim.
Absolutely. Were they also in charge of bringing in Oxlade-Chamberlain, who made his return after 477 days out with injury?
Possibly, yeah.
All right, okay.
He looks like he'd been out for 477
days. Poor chap,
Michael. I know, I hope he comes back to full fitness, but they improved so much when he went off and someone fit came on.
Right. Well, possibly also they were beneficiaries of a Klopp halftime team talk in Ronaldo underwear. We don't know yet. There were some negatives for Liverpool, and indeed certainly some positives for the losing side, Chelsea. Liverpool, for the second game in a row, winning, but with all sorts of openings at the back for their opposition.
Yeah, that's right. I thought Chelsea were superb in the first half. Their midfield three, Frank Lampard slightly changed the system in that he was using two deeper and one further forward in central areas at the weekend. Here he kind of used one slightly deeper and Kante and Kovacic shuffling either side. I thought that worked really well, pulled Liverpool's midfield out of shape. Liverpool's midfield is a strange thing sometimes because you've got Henderson in this new role to the right. He's often much closer to Salah and the central striker as he is to central areas. James Milner drops into strange, almost fullbacky positions sometimes. So there were points at which Fabinho looked a little bit isolated in there, and Chelsea's midfield, I thought, was far more forward-thinking than it had been at times under Sarri last year. There were so many through balls here. Kovacic played a nice one to Pedro. There was a nice one from Jorginho over to Giroud. And that kind of ticky-tacky interplay around the edge of the Liverpool box was something new, I thought, for Chelsea, and I was very impressed by it.
What did you make of Pulisic in his first start?
Yeah, he was lively. I mean, the goal he scored that was disallowed, which I must say I hadn't even twigged that it might have been offside, was excellent. And it played another couple of really nice passes.
Well, he put the ball through for Giroud's goal and generally looked... I mean, some people were calling it a Hazard-esque performance. Is that warranted?
I think in terms of the style and in terms of what he was offering and trying to do, it was probably in that mould, yeah.
Mm.
We should mention the goalkeepers.
Go on then.
Kepa with a good double save.
Wow.
Which was good to see, because often he can go either way in a final. So we've seen him lose, face, so to speak. And then Adrian, the hero. I love seeing players who just come from nowhere. You know, a couple of weeks ago, he was probably wondering what he was going to do this season, and then there he is lifting a trophy. And he just looked really, really happy.
What a story, Adrian, like Rocky, as yeah. Klopp said afterwards. Was his performance that good?
It was all right. I mean, I'd always think you can't... When people go, he saved a penalty in the penalty shootout, I mean, a goalkeeper will probably get a penalty save. Liverpool, actually the first Premier League team to be in two penalty shootouts in the same month since Middlesbrough back in February 2007. There's one for the shootout ultras.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Good. Well, there it was then, the European Super Cup, and long will it live in the memory. It did go to extra time, though. It went on to Thursday morning, didn't it, in the sweltering heat of Istanbul. So I guess one question is how much that's going to take out of these two teams as they head into their fixtures this weekend back in the Premier League. Liverpool, Jurgen Klopp taking on Ralf Hasenhüttl as the Reds head to Southampton. Chelsea are up against Leicester in an early six-pointer, potentially in that 6th-7th battle. Because I know, Michael, you have Chelsea's potentially dropping out of the elite.
Yeah.
This is Frank Lampard's first home game as Chelsea manager, excitingly. Who, Jack, are the only side to beat Chelsea at home in the last 22 fixtures there?
I would guess Leicester.
You would be right. They won 1-0 at the Bridge last season. Jamie Vardy, obviously the scorer there. What are your thoughts on this clash? Are Chelsea going to be pooped by all their exertions midweek?
Possibly, and Leicester won't be. And Jamie Vardy, I mean, I heard you talk on Monday about the Teemu Pukki stat, about him scoring with his first shot on target in each of the last 8 seasons.
That's incredible, isn't it?
That is good. Jamie Vardy has done it in each of the last 4.
Really?
And he didn't have a shot on target in the opening game against Wolves. So
his first shot on target of the last 4 seasons
he scored with. And he's yet to have one this season, so he could very well... extend that at Chelsea. He's actually got... Everyone kind of knows, right, that Vardy's got a brilliant record against the Big Six. But if you actually look a bit deeper, it's really, really good. So his conversion rate, if you take away penalties, because, it's penalties, against non-Big Six teams in the Premier League, 15%. Against Big Six teams, it's 28%.
Wow.
So he genuinely improves against bigger teams.
Almost twice as good.
Yeah, ish.
Very nearly.
I don't like these shots on target stats, sorry. If it was he scored with his first shot of the season, fair enough. But shot on target, what if he's missed 10?
What do you say to that, Duncan?
Well, that is a technically valid point. But it's unlikely that someone like Jamie Vardy would have 10 shots season.
I'm exaggerating. We'll wait and see, won't we?
Zonal marking, can we have your thoughts, says Alex, on Kante playing in a more advanced role under Lampard. Winning ball high up creates danger, but is it not worth him protecting the inexperienced defence? It has... Frank already showed his hand about how he's going to use Kante?
I guess so. I mean, it was kind of a similar role to where he played for Surrey.
Mm.
And I thought he was excellent. I thought Kante was the best player on the pitch. So
on Wednesday night?
Yeah. Mm. So I expect he'll continue to play there. I thought the midfield worked really well, actually. Jorginho had a decent game. Kovacic seemed to have a little bit more freedom to express himself. I thought he was quite safe with his passing last year. I mean, I've been quite negative about Chelsea going into the season, but I think first two games, they've been really impressive. They've passed the ball really well. They've looked to press aggressively. I think their weaknesses, against Manchester United, Zouma had a dreadful game, but he was fine last night. I still have a question mark about where the goals are going to come from. I know Giroud scored last night.
Possibly not Tammy Abraham on last night's performance.
Yeah, I think Abraham's got a way to go. I agree with you, yeah.
Feels like the window of opportunity for him is closing quite rapidly.
Crikey.
I thought Pedro's been really lively as well. I know we shouldn't be surprised after 10 years of doing the exact same thing, but his runs are so good from out to in. There was one tackle that I thought Robertson did really well to track him and get a tackle in, because so many fullbacks are caught out by that movement.
Just a quick word then on Saints-Liverpool before we wrap this section up. Looks a more straightforward fixture, particularly the way Southampton played in the first round of fixtures.
I thought they were a little bit hard done by that Burnley game, to be honest. And I think with Liverpool travelling back, you know, from this game, Southampton really energetic side. I think Southampton have a decent chance of getting a point.
Really? They've lost their last four Premier League games against Liverpool, conceding 11 and scoring just one in that run.
But the game in the spring, this equivalent fixture last season, Liverpool were terrible for about 70, 75 minutes and then popped up with three goals at the end, which was in that run. I mean, Liverpool can equal their best ever run of wins if they win this game. 11 in a row. But yeah, like Michael said, I think Southampton were better than the numbers, the raw numbers suggested against Burnley.
It's a danger, isn't it, to trust too much in raw numbers. And yet here I go with this about Trent Alexander-Arnold, who has registered an assist in five consecutive Premier League appearances. And he's now one shy of the all-time record.
Yep. Held by Fabregas and Ozil, so he can equal that, which is pretty good for a defender.
Very much
so. If he comes back into the team, of course.
Yeah. All right, good. Excellent. That's all of that stuff. More after this.
Right-footed, near post. Heads go up! It's been bundled in by Llorente! Spurs are back in his tie and back ahead. Llorente from 2 yards out sends the Spurs fans into delirium.
Wow. Remember that? Llorente scoring with his hip. It was the Champions League quarterfinals. Spurs knocking out Man City 4-4 after that second leg and through. Tottenham went on away goals. Crazy days. Saturday at 5, excitingly, those two teams go again. Will it be something similar, Duncan?
Well, weirdly, City could hope for the same result because they actually won that game 4-3. So that would do them on Saturday in the old three-point system that we know and love in the Premier League. I mean, that game was notable for the sheer ridiculousness of the start. Was it 5 goals in the first 20-odd minutes? And I think if Spurs are going to do anything in this game, they need to probably start in the same furious fashion. I mean, they were a bit slow to start against Villa last weekend. And, City looked pretty imperious. So I think, they need to start. And Harry Kane, the newly slender, fit-looking Harry Kane, needs to hit the ground running.
Is it just his haircut or has he genuinely lost weight?
Well, I don't know exactly. I'd like to weigh Harry Kane.
Right. I wonder if there've been any stats.
He does look a bit.
He does look thinner, but it could just be the haircut. Is Eriksen the most nailed-on name on the Tottenham team sheet for this one?
I think he will start after last weekend. Yeah, he just made such a difference. And again, a little bit like Firmino, I think he's one player that Spurs just don't have a direct replacement for, really. They have some other attacking midfielders like Lamella and Ali, but I don't think of them as kind of overwhelmingly creative players. So, yeah, I'd like to see Eriksen start.
Okay. Jack, do you see Spurs with any chance of going to the Etihad and getting another famous victory over City?
A team like Tottenham should be able to at least stiffen up to the extent that they can stop City playing through them. You look at the kind of defenders Spurs have.
Right.
They've got the extra cover now of Ndombele, especially if he plays with Winks and Sissoko. That's a fairly formidable platform from which to build. I just think teams going blow for blow with City, you might get lucky. You might score 3 goals every now and again. But even, like Duncan said, in that away game, they did concede 4. It's hard to see anyone stifling City if you're just going to attack all the time. So I think playing it fairly conservatively would probably be my approach to it.
Okay. This is the marquee fixture of the weekend and a repeat of an absolutely outstanding fixture from not too many months ago. So presumably we're all really looking forward to seeing this one, are we? Or
yeah,
is it just so early in the season that...
No, I think I'm very much looking forward to it. I do have a suspicion that City are just going to be even better than last season and just blow a lot of teams away. I think Tottenham were... It took a long time to get going against Villa, and I think there's some question marks with a couple of defensive positions. And yeah, I do fear for a lot of the sides coming across City, because with De Bruyne back, Mahrez, you know, was kind of in and out of the side last year. I think if he gets towards his best, then that's two extra players almost from last season.
And Gabriel Jesus as well, you could add to that. Watched him a lot in the summer and he really looked like he was back on it. Obviously scored first weekend, but I think especially now Sané is out, I wouldn't be surprised to see him starting on the wing every now and again as well. So, yeah, pretty much three top-rate players who weren't perhaps on it last year, obviously minus Sané.
And it's easy to forget how bad Tottenham's form was towards the end of last season. You know, if they lose this match, it'll be seven away defeats in a row in the Premier League.
Really?
It's something they haven't done since George Graham was the manager, that glorious era. So, yeah, they're up against it.
Crikey. Meantime, Man City's neighbours, Man United, will be in action on Monday night when they visit Wolves in another particularly intriguing fixture. Wolves, who were disappointed not to come away from the King Power with a win. Man United were thrilled to emerge from their top six clash with Chelsea with a whopping 4-0 scoreline. Wolves, though, with a terrific record against Man United.
They didn't lose any of the three games last season, won two of them, and were hugely impressive in those games. I think it looked to me like they were fairly well up to speed last weekend against Leicester. First half especially, I think they shaded the game, probably could have scored, had a goal disallowed early in the second half. And, you know, those Europa League evenings, I suppose, early in the summer will eventually come back to haunt a team. But it looked to me like they were very much in their rhythm. It just lacked a little bit of finesse in the final third. Diogo Jota and Raul Jimenez didn't really have their shooting boots on.
Right. So they're in action tonight, aren't they, in the Europa League? Is that right?
They are.
Yeah, against Punic, is that right?
Punic on the streets of Wolverhampton.
Right. Which, strangely, wasn't a lyric in that song.
Should have been.
Didn't he never name-checked?
Should have been.
Wolverhampton.
Wolves have got a weird hex over United, actually. This obviously doesn't apply now, but there's only been three instances ever in the Premier League of a team in 20th beating a team who are top, and two of them have been Wolves beating Manchester United.
So okay.
Even when Wolves are bad, yes, they beat Manchester United at home.
This is a different United, though, surely.
But yeah, that's what... I mean, they should just cruise past this.
No. But Man United looked so good last weekend. 4-0 winners against Chelsea.
Yeah.
That Pogba McTominay dream team in midfield.
Yeah, we go again, as McTominay shouted.
Yeah.
I mean, United had three counter-attacks last weekend, which I think we all saw they were playing that sort of football. In Mourinho's last full season, two seasons ago, they only had 13 all season. So
okay, well, there's
definitely a shift in approach.
If they're playing counter-attacking football, is that something that is suited to a clash with Wolves?
No, not really. Wolves play very deep, and I think Tim struggled to get them on the counter. I thought Manchester United were distinctly unimpressive last weekend.
Oh, really?
I think it's possibly the least convincing 4-0 win I've ever seen.
Jack, where do you stand on the United question?
I think somewhere between Michael's view and the common view.
Really?
I thought they were... I didn't think they were terrible by any means. I thought they were... Chelsea, I think, opened up quite considerably after the first goal, but you still have to put away your opportunities. And I thought there was a verve to them that was certainly missing in the final stages of last season. I know you can't judge too much by the way players celebrate in their body language, but there looked to be a little bit more levity there. I think the way Martial has been allowed a slightly more free role. I never really understand players who come here as forwards and are kind of shunted to the left. This was something slightly different to the one I mentioned earlier, but I saw Martial as a very good option as a number nine when he came to United. Was soon moved to the left. Didn't help that he scored from the left against Liverpool in one of his first games, but I never really saw him as a winger. I didn't think he was particularly good there. Rarely see him dribble past a man despite his speed and skill. I think he's much better in those central areas, being allowed to drift. I think that works with Rashford as well, who I think has a similar skill set actually, and letting those two get on with it is a pretty good option, I think, up front. Against the better teams, I think that midfield will be found to be lacking. McTominay, I think he's fine, but he's mainly just a large man.
Just a large man.
Well, I've been asking myself, what, is he good or just tall?
Right.
And I think he's okay, but I think he is mainly just tall. And Andreas Pereira, I think, is a decent player, but I don't think necessarily a top six midfielder.
Who's going to win this game, Jack?
I think it'll be a draw.
Okay, that's exciting. And on a Monday evening. And speaking of things which are exciting and on a Monday evening, Duncan, how about that upcoming Totally Football Live in London?
It's hurtling towards us.
It certainly is, because it's happening, Michael, since you asked, on Monday, September the 30th, when Duncan will find himself on stage with James Horncastle and Julien Laurens, our Tuesday crew, of course, on the Totally Football Show. Would you like to get tickets, listener? You can at southbankcentre.co.uk. Just search for Totally Football Show. And there's not many tickets left, I'm seeing here. So get on that. If you do miss out, or if you're just plain not in the London area, we do have a date that's just been added in November in Liverpool. So if that's more, you know, to your convenience, then we'll bring you details on that shortly. Top six are under siege. We'll have details after this.
It's nice to have a break from advertising, so here's some classical music. Nice. Mm. At Paddy Power, we thought football shirts could use a break from advertising too. That's why we've sponsored Huddersfield Town's shirt without a logo and started the Save Our Shirt campaign, where any football team that Paddy Power sponsor will be, well, unsponsored. Don't you wish we weren't on your shirt too? Now, let's get Bark to the music. Paddy Power, enough of the nonsense. 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Top six are under siege, Michael.
Yep.
Arsenal taking on Burnley and the early kickoff on Saturday. You remember, when was it? Season four last. Burnley finished just behind Arsenal. There was that question, could they overtake the Gunners? I mean, it's back on this season, isn't it, after that terrific performance in the first week?
I'm not sure. No.
Ashley Barnes?
Yeah,
hip-hop's Ashley Barnes.
Yeah, he's been playing very well over the last year or so. It's funny with the new Premier League season, because there's so many like new players, new managers and new things to get your head around. And Burnley are just the same, aren't they? Just the same players, the same manager. The only player they've brought in, a left-back from Stoke. You think, okay, that makes sense.
But Danny Drinkwater?
Yeah, I'm not sure he'll figure too prominently for a while.
You think that's going to be a kind of Joe Hart-esque signing?
I don't know, to be honest. I mean, he's barely played for 2 years, has he?
I think he was brought to remind Sean Dyche what to do before interviews.
drink water.
That's great.
Well, that was way too complex for me. Right. An Arsenal stat, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang has scored a brace in all three of his Premier League games against Burnley. It's impressive, isn't it?
It is. It's Pepe versus Pope. In this game as well, maybe. Arsenal haven't won their opening two Premier League games for quite a long time, since the evening standard went free.
Right.
Don't think it's connected to that. But
when was that? 2010?
Yeah.
Have won their last 10 in a row in all competitions against the Clarets.
Yeah, they've got a good record. Sean Dyche has lost all of his Premier League matches against Arsenal.
Well, I tell you what, let's help Jonathan Pearce with his commentary notes for this game by mentioning that the last time Burnley actually beat Arsenal in the league was the 7th of September 1974, when this was number one. For a reason, let the reason be love. That's right, Jack Lang. Do you know who that was? No, it wasn't Boyzone. No, this is 74. This is the Osmonds, the actual original.
I should point out, I didn't actually.
Mormon boy band.
Very good.
Yeah. The Osmonds. You remember Crazy Horses? There you are, that was them. And Donny Osmond and Marie. Anyway, that's enough Osmond chat. It was later covered by Boyzone, I think. Great song, obviously. Do you know what was number one straight after that, by the way? What replaced that at the top of the British Hit Parade in 1974, Duncan?
Well, I do, because Ben texted it to me.
I'm so sorry about this, listener.
It was Kung Fu Fighting.
By Carl Weathers, he's the actor.
Carl Jenkinson?
Yeah, that's the one. Brilliant. What heady days for pop music. Can you imagine that and then Kung Fu Fighting, double whammy?
Incredible.
Literally incredible. Right, okay. Arsenal taking over. Oh, on a less happy note, interesting article on Your Athletic thing from Amy Lawrence about the kind of ongoing fallout of that awful assault that Ozulin Kolasinac suffered. When was that? Back in July, when Kolasinac basically managed to see off a couple of armed carjackers with his bare hands, and everything seemed to calm down. But then since then, the pair have been effectively almost in hiding, because it seems like repercussions have ensued. A couple of people were arrested outside one of their homes. Kolasinac sent his family away from London and his dog as well. And they're back in training now, apparently, but it seems like for the last month or so, there's just been all sorts of kind of mess going on off the back of that. Bizarre situation, no?
It just shows that these situations, everyone saw the video of Kolasinac and I'm sure had a giggle at it and thought, you know, well done on him. But obviously these things stay with people, and especially if the situation is rumbling on, as it appeared in Amy's great piece. Yeah, I hope they can get back to a mental state where they feel they're ready to play football again.
Listener, we mentioned last week that we're playing a game called the Match Pint Budweiser Premier Predictor. Why? Well, it's completely free, and every week you can win things like beer, a shirt, or match tickets. To win, it's pretty simple. Just correctly predict the scores of the weekend's televised games. Download the Match Pint app, open the Budweiser Premier Predictor, choose your favourite Premier League team, and then get predicting. If you want to play against us, we've got our own Totally Football Show League, which you can join by entering the league code TOTALLY. Hundreds of you have, and you're doing much better than us. That's the Match Pint Budweiser Premier Predictor. Download it now, enter that league code TOTALLY and get predicting. There's a free pint of beer waiting for you when you do. Full terms and conditions are on the website. It's 18 plus only, and please drink responsibly. Michael, do you like Paul Whitehouse and Bob Mortimer?
Very much so.
Do you?
Yep.
Good. Then you would really enjoy listening to the latest episode of our Series Linked podcast. There's a big interview with them ahead of the start of their new show, Gone Fishing, which I must admit I'm not familiar with, but would like to be. And anyway, you can hear about that and all the telly news that you need in a handy 30-minute digest. Series Linked. Search for that wherever you get your podcasts. Okay, on to the rest of the Premier League weekend, which consists of Villa taking on Bournemouth, Sheffield United against Crystal Palace, Brighton West Ham, Norwich Newcastle, and Everton Watford. Michael, you saw Bournemouth against Sheffield United last weekend, didn't you?
Yes.
Did it satisfy your thirst for all those kind of wilding tactical innovations?
A little bit. They played it a little bit more cautiously than they did last season, which I think is understandable in the Premier League. I think Bournemouth very good on the counter-attacks. They wanted to be a little bit more secure. But there were some, you know, interesting overlapping runs on occasion. And the player I was really impressed with was Oliver Norwood, who plays in front of the defence, has a lot of positional discipline. And as soon as they got him into some space, he's got a great passing range and knocking diagonals out to the flanks. So he's a player I've heard a lot about over the years. But yeah, that was probably the first time I've seen him live, and I thought he was excellent.
Okay. Interesting things about Wesley Moraes. Jack, are you familiar with his background?
A little bit, yes. He didn't really play a great deal in Brazil, but I've seen a couple of scouting videos of what he did in Belgium. I thought he was it's an interesting signing because he's not necessarily an out-and-out goal-getter. I think he's going to be more useful in build-up play. He's kind of a wall to bounce off, and I think that's useful for Villa because they've got a lot of technical players around him, players who are good at finding the net from range and getting into the box. McGinn, we saw last week, Grealish, I think, as well. They've got two or three quite exciting wingers. So I'd be surprised if he got 10, 15 goals. But if he gets, seven goals and is a useful decoy or a battering ram, I think that will be just what they need.
Fair enough. When I was saying interesting things, I was thinking of items like he had a son when he was 15, apparently, Wesley. And he made it as a pro despite having one leg shorter than the other. I mean, we all do, but I presume it's kind of noticeably so in his case. Interesting.
I think this game, in a Sesame Street-style manner, is brought by the number 31 because Villa faced 31 shots in their first game, which is a lot, more than anyone else. And Bournemouth, who conceded 31 goals in their last 11 Premier League away games. It's quite a good fixture for Villa to start the season at home because Bournemouth are pretty bad away from home.
3-1 win, do you think?
4-2.
How about that? Brighton playing West Ham. Were you impressed with Brighton against Watford, Michael?
Broadly speaking, I think there were a lot of big wins last weekend that were slightly charitable scorelines to the winnings. They clearly have improved a lot from last season, and I'm quite positive about Potter.
Didn't they start last season with a really big win over Man United, or at least it was early under Clatoon?
Didn't they lose to Watford on the opening day last?
Oh yeah, you're right, they did. They did have an early win at home to Man United, but you know, just to say that those early results can sometimes be misleading.
It was a weird weekend last week, and there was five games where a team won by three or more goals. The last time there were more on the opening day was back in 1951, really early.
What was number one back then, Duncan?
Glenn Miller or something, I don't know.
Your knowledge is extraordinary. Good.
I like that Potter seems to have taken the brakes off slightly. Just the substitutions he made, the fact that both Andone and Neil Mopé scored within 5 minutes of coming on. Now, suddenly, it looks like they have three or four. I wouldn't include Locadi in that because I still don't think he's very good. But they have options and people who can take some of the workload off Murray's shoulders, which I think is long overdue.
Superb. Who's looking forward to Everton, Watford, Norwich, Newcastle and Sheffield United against Palace? Norwich, Newcastle is the Steve Bruce derby. Mm. Do you know he made 140 appearances at Norwich before he went to Man United?
I did. He scored 10 goals for them in 1985-86, which is a good haul. I mean, he got 19 for Manchester United in 1990-91, which is extraordinary for a centre-half.
Who are the Murphy twins, Duncan? Or anyone?
Don't know.
Josh. I think it's Josh and Jacob.
Norwich's most feared crime family.
No, they were Norwich footballers, actually. And one left and went to Newcastle. And I got quite excited thinking that we might see them in action against each other. But the other one's left Norwich in the meantime.
On the subject of brothers, James.
I haven't finished my Murphy story yet. In 2015, a local paper did a feature on the Murphys and whether you could tell them apart. Their own mother only got 7 out of 10.
How many questions could there possibly
be? She's got 10 sons.
Different angles or...
No, I'm not sure. Anyway.
James, you know Tammy Abraham?
Yep.
Do you know what his younger brother's called?
Colonel.
No.
Timmy?
Abraham.
Yes.
Is it Timmy Abraham?
Yes. Very good.
Are there any other siblings?
Tommy. No, but they could have had a Tommy. But
could have had a Tommy. Yeah. That's really unusual. So they had a Tammy for a boy as well, because it's more generally regarded as like Tammy Wynette.
Yeah.
Pavel and Ivana Nyebved. Do you know what their son and daughter are called? Pavel and Ivana. Mm.
It's the same with Mourinho.
Jose's called his son Jose.
And his wife?
Marina?
Matilde?
Yeah.
And their kids are called Jose and Matilde?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not for me. I've got one more thing on Norwich.
Okay,
like
yep.
Actual pod-worthy stuff.
Right, hang on.
do you know who Newcastle's last Premier League away goal in August was scored against?
Is it Norwich?
No, it's Steve Bruce's Sunderland.
Oh,
back
wow,
in 2011,
okay.
So it's been a while.
That is a long time. Jack... Joelinton, how should you pronounce his name?
Joelinton.
Joelinton.
Yeah, the emphasis is on the L.
Joelinton.
Joelinton. So people are making that joke saying, oh, he's Joe Linton. But more accurate would be...
Joelinton.
Joe Wellington.
Oh, Joe Wellington.
Surely the joke is Joelinton.
Is it? Everton are playing Watford, everybody. Is there still a bit of Marco Silva needle to this one?
Oh, yeah, what did they do last season? When they played the game at Vicarage Road, there was a lot of
snakes.
Hashtag banter snakes.
Didn't they all have snakes?
Plastic snakes.
Not real ones, luckily. And they also... Did you remember the... Because we had Emma Saunders in, and she was discussing the fact that on the PA they were going to play loads of probably Duran Duran Union of the Snake, another snake-related...
For a team that ditches so many managers...
Yeah.
I wonder if they're entitled to be so...
Mm. I don't know.
So sniffy about that.
I don't know. They look good, though, last weekend, Everton, with their 13th clean sheet of 2019, which is defensive solidity under Marco Silva. Jack, reasons for Watford fans to be cheerful. They've signed 17-year-old João Pedro from Fluminense.
I spoke a bit about him during the Nations League in the summer, but for those who didn't hear that, he's a really talented young boy. One of his first goals was a sublime overhead kick on the run. One of the best overhead kicks I've ever seen. And yeah, I think obviously 17 is very young. He's got a lot of developing to do. But in terms of raw talent, he's one of the most exciting players in Brazil at the moment.
This is the noise his goal made. Dois para o Cruzeiro, dois para o Fluminense. João Pedro aparece de novo.
Igual, pelo jeito, vai ter pênalti aqui no Mineirão. Que golaço, Rogério. Que golaço.
Yeah, it's an amazing goal, isn't it? Tim Vickery says he reminds him of a young hockey Santa Cruz. What do you say to that?
Wouldn't have been my first port of call, but then Tim Vickery has no doubt watched him a lot more than me.
All right, excellent.
Just on Watford,
yep.
It's worth congratulating them for winning the prize for... The first match of the day of the season, I didn't know you'd gone there, transfer of the year. Very shocked to see the camera pan to Craig Dawson in a Watford shirt, completely passed me by. And In fact, I don't think I'd remembered he even existed, let alone played for Watford. So well done to
Craig, if you're listening, the rest of us were more than aware of your continued existence and the fact that you'd turned up at Vicarage Road. Sheffield United will be hosting Crystal Palace this weekend. Last time these two teams met in the top flight was the first season of the Premier League. Palace won 1-0. Chris Coleman with the goal back there, Michael. I fancy Sheffield United to continue their impressive-looking start with a victory here. What do you think?
I agree. I think they're a good side. And, yeah, I'm not sure about Palace at the moment. I fear for them slightly.
Sheffield United have never won a Premier League game on a Sunday. The only team to ever play more than one game on a Sunday and not win on the Sabbath.
Black Sabbath for them.
Yes.
So that's the Premier League weekend. Listener, be advised that there's some really solid goal content coming up as we delve into your questions, find out what on earth happened to Celtic and more besides. Right now, though, over to producer Ben.
Thank you, Jimbo. Listeners, it's Lee Price from Paddy Power. And Lee, let's look ahead to this Premier League weekend. City versus Spurs is the big game. Give us the overall on this one, please.
Yeah, another brilliant early season game. The fixture computer spoiled us this term. It's almost as if it's been done by design. Anyway, City are favourites for this one. They're 3-10. Tottenham are chunky 15-2. Not there's anything wrong with being chunky. Also, I'm told, a lot. And we have a money back as a free bet offer here too. If Raheem Sterling scores, selected markets only, pre-match singles only, max free bet £10, T&Cs apply.
Two defeats in a row for Frank Lampard, but can he get a first win at home when Chelsea take on Leicester City?
Well, it's better than away to United or playing Liverpool in general, but Leicester still aren't exactly ideal visitors, are they? That said, we do go odds on for a Chelsea win. Just 8-11 though, so maybe some value there to chuck in your weekend acca. Leicester are 7-2 to win this one, or it's 13-5 for a draw.
And finally, Lee, Burnley had one of the biggest results over the previous weekend, 3-0 against Southampton. Can they win against Arsenal? But as we've been discussing, can Aubameyang still get two?
This would be some way to start the weekend if it comes in. Let's begin with the safest bit of the double. Aubameyang is 4-9 to score against Burnley. Now, usually, I would scoff at a player being odds-on to score in a game. But after his finishing to Newcastle, I'm totally on board with this one. But the other bit, less so. Burnley winning is 15-2. Those listening closely, hi mum, will know that that's the same price as Spurs to beat City. But I think it's a long way off being a similar likelihood. Double those two bets together though, Ben, and you get odds of 27-1. Good luck.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop.
Drags it with his left foot. Jones is going to stick it with his right and just strangles it a little, just snatches at it a little bit. Oh, no! God! No! Martel scored. Tavares has scored.
No one's laughing here. Why is Alan McInally so upset?
I presume it's Celtic related.
Yes, it is. Were you not watching this?
I guess,
this was Celtic.
I guess not on that feed.
Losing 4-3 at home to a Romanian side, Cluj. Dan Petrescu's Cluj. And exiting for the second season in a row. The Champions League before it even began. Celtic. Crikey.
I watched this, actually. I watched the highlights on the Celtic TV channel.
Oh, did you?
And there was no Ochnu. There was just a lot of deathly silence. Not for Celtic fans, but objectively quite funny.
I mean, it really wasn't, Jack. And for the club, it's actually disastrous because they just sold Kieran Tierney and with the notion they were going to rebuild the club with the money and stuff. But now they can't offer Champions League football. Probably loads of their other players will want out because they're not going to be playing in the top competition. They also miss out on, I mean, potentially up to 30 million in terms of revenue from that competition. It's all a bit of a disaster.
Did you see Scott Brown's handball?
Yes. So this was a tweet from a Celtic fan with some strong words about Neil Lennon's management, and Scott Brown liked it. Entirely by accident, his finger strayed while he was scrolling through. It could happen.
He clearly doesn't have that much control over his arms if his concession of the penalty was anything to go by.
Right, I didn't see that.
Oh, he jumped up to head a corner away and just tipped it away like it was a basketball.
Oh dear. Well, Rangers go this evening, I believe. They are up against Midtjylland, aren't they, in the Europa League qualifiers. Ajax had a near miss against PAOK but got through. Dinamo Kiev got knocked out by Brugge. Basel are out. Porto lost on away goals to Krasnodar, so they're out. They got to the quarterfinals of the Champions League last season. Big shocks in Europe, eh?
The Ajax one was quite dramatic, at least from the Greek press was screaming murder over that one. Craig Pawson was the referee.
Right.
Gave Ajax 3 penalties. And the Greek press, I saw a headline that was UEFA Mafia.
Oh.
Which was...
Who should be more offended by that, Mafia or UEFA?
That's a very good question. I think it was a little harsh because I thought they were all penalties.
Right.
3 penalties is a lot to give to a team, but if they're all penalties...
Well, if they're all penalties. Anyway...
Were you as shocked to see Craig Pawson as you were to see Craig Dawson?
I was less shocked.
There'll be more on Celtic and Rangers in the Scottish Football Show tomorrow. Mike Lenny, you're excited for the return of the Bundesliga this weekend. And Duncan, your Wickham Wanderers are taking on MK Dons.
In the fake Buckinghamshire derby, yeah.
Right. It's a busy week for the Dons. They faced Wimbledon in the Carabao Cup on Tuesday night. It was 2-2. It went to penalties. And then MK Dons won 4-2. Tell us, Duncan, why did the scoreboard break and Wimbledon not print a programme?
Well, the last time they played them, and obviously this fixture is riddled with bitterness and acrimony, they didn't refer to the Dons in the programme, so they called them MK at all points, and that caused an issue and stuff. So this time, they didn't...
Didn't they get fined or something
as well?
I think
so, yeah. So they didn't print a programme this time, and the scoreboard mysteriously malfunctioned.
That circumvented the problem nicely.
Yeah. You know. So we'll see what happens at Wickham this weekend.
Do Wickham call them the Dons, or do they...
Well, there's a lot of Wickham fans who don't go to that fixture because, you know, out of sort of solidarity and
fair,
stuff.
So, fair. Right.
Yeah.
What do you think the statute of limitations on that move is? At what point can we start to treat them? Or has it already passed? Can we just move on with our lives?
I'd say it's probably tipped over now. And I think the fact that now AFC Wimbledon have played them, and a lot of their fans have gone away to MK, that sort of draws a line under it a little bit. But, you know, I'm sure there's still some... there's not going to be any Arsenal fans that are still angry about the move from Woolwich. They'll be very old.
Say that.
But, possibly.
OK, in the Carabao Cup this week, there were other scores, like Leeds putting Salford out. Oh, and Huddersfield losing 1-0 to Lincoln. Do you know that Jan Seifert has still only won one game since he took over from David Wagner?
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, you can hear more about all of that on the Totally Football League show. Let's delve into our mailbag to finish off, because there have been some really interesting questions. Billy Hush says, does football even need an offside law? I say simply carve the pitch into 3 zones, as in ice hockey, and say the ball can't go direct from zone A to C. No arguing about whether a ball does that or not. In ice hockey, if you're not familiar with it, the ball has to be the first thing that enters the attacking zone. If you're in the attacking zone before the ball comes in, you need to get out before the ball comes in, otherwise you will be offside. Except they call it a puck, of course, in that case. Would that work in football? I think it's a brilliant suggestion.
Nah,
why not?
Having that. It's rubbish.
It's not. It's really, really clear. You just have the official standing on the line, and if you precede the puck over the line, or ball in this case, you're offside.
I've watched games of ice hockey on TV, and I've yet to see the puck, so I'm not sure how it's
Well, yeah, but when you're actually there, you can see the puck. But the football is objectively a lot bigger and easier to spot.
Yeah, I think the offside rule's fine.
Is it?
I mean, Marco van Basten has a thing that we should abolish offside, doesn't he? I think it's the silliest suggestion ever.
It periodically
Until
comes
you've heard
up
that
every
one.
Few years. Someone will say, oh, let's just get rid of offside.
Well, I think half the problem was the VAR decisions last week about City's goals.
You might as well say, let's just get rid of handball.
Yeah.
You go, actually, you can just pick the ball up. It's fine.
Okay.
On the ice hockey thing,
yes.
Are defenders allowed to be in the zone you're talking about?
So the other team are allowed to be there.
Right.
The ice is divided up into 3 sections. A neutral zone in the middle... And the two ends were surrounding the goal.
Is rink a dirty word in ice hockey?
You say the ice, basically, yeah. Rink's what you do, you're kind of figure skating on. So basically, when you go up ice, when you head up the ice, you need to make sure that the puck goes into the opposing, into the attacking zone before you do. And if you are in there, if you skate in there and the puck gets knocked out by the defending team, which is a brilliant defensive tactic, just clear the puck out of your zone. And then all the attacking players who are in there are immediately, instantly offside, and they have to get out of the attacking zone. I think it would work brilliant in football. I reckon it's worth at least experimenting on in, say, the Carabao Cup to see how it works. Producer Ben's waving a hand almost as if he wants me to move on.
Try it in the National League. That tends to be where they try stuff.
Yeah.
They try kick-ins there. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I reckon we should do that. Okay. Speaking of the offside rule, says producer Ben, they're actually due in the studio right now. So we better just fly through these last three or four questions. MJ Pryor, Oily Sailor, can you provide some stats about how useful corners actually are, given the excitement people have when they're given? Do they lead to more goals for the defending team or on the counter?
It's around 1% to 2% of corners that end up as goals. So it's not.
But more for the defending team or for the attacking team?
No, I mean, it's very rare that a team will counter-attack successfully from a corner and score.
But all right, good
the excitement that people get over a corner in England is slightly unwarranted.
Right.
I mean, you may as well just concede corners if that was the case. Just from centre, boot the ball out behind your own goal.
And do it the stylish way. Throw in to your keeper who lets it across the line into the net. And that'll be a corner.
Brilliant. So that's very nice. Brune and Jordan Moreland are asking, when Golazzo is coming back, because they've missed the sweet seat sound of Gab ranting, it should be soon. And I tell you what, one last one for now. Greg Jenner says, if the old foreign player rule were reinstated and teams were only allowed three foreign stars, say in a hypothetical dystopian future in which we'd impose radical new immigration laws or something like that, Chuck, which big EPL stars would be sold?
Well, most of them.
Yeah, okay, that's the answer right
there. Sadio Mane.
Yep.
If you think about it, Liverpool would keep Alisson, Van Dijk,
and Salah,
and they'd have to get rid of Mane. Wouldn't have to get rid of him, but he would be the one probably that, or Firmino. So it would
shockwaves.
City
would
be De Bruyne, Edison. I think
who would get the chocolate,
and then probably also keep Bernardo. So I think
really,
yeah, I think Aguero
Carnage.
Would go
and swap Aguero for Gary Walsh and get on with it.
What about Arsenal?
Bamiyang, Torreira, and Bellerin?
It's a tough one, isn't it?
I tell you what, Sheffield United would be fine there, James.
Yeah, because they became, what was it, only the first team...
For a long time.
For a long time to field only English and Irish players. Although I'm not sure whether the Irish would be what that would...
Before the days of the three foreigner rule, you could field Irish players without it counting towards your quota.
Right. Especially if they play as a backstop, you're saying?
The backstop, yeah.
Right, okay, good. All right, we better go now. So... we will be back on Monday when we'll be joined by Daniel Story, Natalie Jedra, and Tom Williams. So do make sure you're with us for that. Have yourselves a great weekend. In the meantime, there's loads of Totally and related podcast content if you want, including Duncan and Jack, the official Fancy Premier League podcast, which we're going to be doing in a second. Exciting news in that
on
one.
On top. Of our league.
Of our mini league, yeah. But an outstanding opening weekend from Duncan and Jack, and less so from me. But anyway, that's it for now. From all of us here, many thanks, Jack, Michael and Duncan. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter. And make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.